206-5738. Happy birthday, KPFT.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Tells us that it is 5 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston, or kpft.org on the internet. I'm Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys through the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips amid worlds of enchantment, before returning us safely to the present. Indeed, on this journey, we will take you on a journey, and there may be moments when it seems like we'll never quite get back. But I assure you, we will return you safely to the present. My guest tonight is Dr. Kathy Kirkland. Kathy is an MD who's practiced over several parts of Texas in emergency rooms. The story begins last winter when
I said, I'm going to Big Bend. And I'm going to take my Subaru Outback. Yes, it's a 2011, but it's running perfectly, and they're supposed to run forever, right? I thought I was going by myself. I even went so far as to rent a satellite phone. But I said to Kathy, who's always up for a good adventure, want to come with me to Big Bend? She was like, yeah. We were on it. We had the guidebooks. We had tickets to a star party at McDonald Observatory in West Texas. I found a place, an Airbnb place, a cute little cabin, which we'll describe to you in a moment. It was different. And we had a friend along the way to stop and stay with so that we could break up the journey from Houston.
And on the way back.
And actually, this is the friend who brought us together. So we start our journey, get to Janice and Therrell's. We spend the night there in, what town do they live in?
Kerrville.
And on Saturday, I guess. And then Sunday morning, we get up early for our adventure out west. So, Kathy, tell us what happened.
Well, we had spent the evening with Janice and Therrell and their six cats and one dog. Drinking wine and talking and enjoying wonderful camaraderie. We returned the next morning for some more visiting and then headed west. And everything went fine. It went great. Perfect. For about 3 or 4 hours, just a little bit of traffic, no slowdown, speed limit 75, but of course everybody's going 80, 85?
90.
Yeah. Then the first breakdown. The engine overheated. We stopped immediately, like everybody tells you to do, pulling off the road in the desolate, stark landscape that's West Texas. Mary called Geico, her insurer, for road service. They would send a tow truck from Alpine, 120 miles away. So we settled down to wait. I spotted a mile marker up ahead, but couldn't read it, even with binoculars. So I started walking that way. It seemed like it wasn't getting any closer. The light in the desert place tricks with your depth perception. A couple in a truck stopped to see if I needed help. I told them what I was doing and asked them to please call or text me the number on the mile marker when they passed it, and they did. Mile marker 317. So 317 miles from the Texas-New Mexico border, and 562 miles from Louisiana. I walked back to the car, and that couple actually came back. They made a U-turn and came back to check on us. And I guess this is the first time that we experience the kindness of strangers in West Texas. Yeah. So we sat in the dirt in the shade of the car on the side away from the traffic. And minutes later, a DPS trooper pulled up. When he heard our story, he said that he would wait with us until the tow truck arrived. So he sat in his car, and we sat in the dirt and did all the puzzles in the San Antonio Sunday Express that I had bought that morning. And then we read a few articles out loud. And then we played hangman, breaking occasionally to pee in the nearby culvert that ran under the highway.
Yes. Thank goodness there was that culvert. We had cover.
Yeah.
And do you remember what I said to you about if we get to 20 questions... we're doomed.
And I said, I know how to make 20 questions last a long time. And you said,
how do you do that? Yes.
I said, you don't think of anything. About dark, the tow truck arrived. It was driven by Keaton, who was Brad Pitt to our Thelma and Louise, but without the sex, rape, murder, or suicidal ending.
This was the clean version of Thelma and Louise, but
yes,
oh my God.
Yeah, the PG, yeah.
He was definitely Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he was great. Keaton was a college student at Sol Ross University in Alpine, studying wildlife management. He was also a master welder and an accomplished mechanic. He looked under the hood and said he could fix the car for us tomorrow in Alpine. Mary had found a hotel for us and let the Airbnb hosts know we were delayed. This was the place that we had planned to stay that night. So we got to the hotel about 9 or 10. We ate a little of the tons of food that we had brought and drank a bottle of wine and fell asleep. We had flipped a coin for the king-size bed versus the pull-out sofa bed. Mary doesn't trust rock, paper, scissors. She thought I might cheat like her older siblings always had. I got the sofa, and it was one of the most comfortable beds I've ever slept. The next morning, Keaton, called about 8, and Mary went with him to the auto parts store. An hour or so later, the car was good to go, and so were we. Man, was it cold. Remember in the 30s and windy?
There were icicles outside. There were icicles on the trees. This was March. There were icicles hanging on the trees. I took pictures of them.
Yeah.
And windy, yes.
Yeah. An hour drive to our cabin, located on 10 acres of desert. Tiny, only about 7 by 8 feet, with bunk beds, microwave, coffee pot, outhouse, outdoor shower. But it also had electricity, AC, and heat. So we unloaded our stuff. And then we headed to the window in Big Bend National Park, where we set off on the supposedly easy 2.5-mile hike. So 5 miles round trip.
And yes, 2.5 miles straight down.
Right.
2.5 miles straight up.
Back up, yeah. I had new boots to get used to, plus I'm slow, so Mary soon got way ahead of me. The landscape there is stunning. About halfway to the window, my right knee, which had never given me a moment's trouble, started hurting a little. I'll walk it off, I thought. It got worse. By the time I got near the window, I was having to stop every 10 minutes to rest it. I met Mary about 400 steps shy of the window, according to her, what do you call that fancy watch that you have?
Oh, yeah, my Fitbit.
Her Fitbit. And so I thought, well, I'm so close, I might as well go on. And so I went on, I sat for a while in that gorgeous gorge. It was amazing to see. It's an incredible sight to see. A very small gray-brown bird looked for food a few feet away, uninterested in me. After a while, I got up and headed back. Now I was stopping every 5 minutes. I stumbled at one point and fell onto my back and left elbow. I laid there for a few minutes, saying out loud, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. And I was. I got up. Now I'm stopping every 3 or 4 minutes. If I kept my knees straight, it hurt less, but it was awkward to walk that way. There was no one else on the trail, and it was getting near dusk. An hour later, after I had passed the marker that said 1 more mile, a man came up behind me and stopped and asked if I was okay. I had stopped right then, and I was holding my foot behind me, flexing my knee, and I told him, yeah, I'm okay, but my knee is just killing me. He says, oh, did you lose a pair of glasses? I said, oh, please, no. And I started rummaging around in my backpack, but indeed, I had lost my glasses. Did you pick them up? No, I left them there. I didn't know if their owner was coming or going. I guess I looked pretty desperate. I really need those glasses, except in bright light, and then I wear prescription sunglasses. I'll go get them for you, he said. It was about 1/4 mile back. I protested. I said I would get them, but he said, well, let me walk along with you for a bit, and then we'll go back together. There's another path we can take. And I just think he sensed how desperate I was, and that my knee was really hurting me. I really did not want to have to walk back and add that much more time to my walk.
And it was uphill.
Yeah, it was uphill, and it was getting dark, and I knew that you were probably wondering where the hell I was. So we walked along, me stopping every 20 steps now, and he offered his shoulder for support. Then he said, I'm going back for your glasses, and he headed off. I continued stopping often, and soon he was back with my glasses, panting. Did you run? I asked. I kind of poured it on a bit, he said modestly. He was just panting when he got back. He had run like the last, I don't know, little bit. He was a retired rancher, now spending time in Colorado and the Big Bend area and other places. He drives a fifth wheel, moving his 4 horses from place to place. Name is Vic. Thank you again, Vic. We finally got to the parking lot where Mary was waiting, concerned. No cell service out there. Vic said he was going to have a beer at the lodge just up the hill. I really wanted to treat him, but I didn't think I could take another step. So I thanked him, promising to either pay his kindness back or pay it forward. I really wish I had forced myself now. He was so kind and interesting.
Yeah. I do remember when y'all came up and you said, do you mind going and having a drink with Vic? And I was thinking, I don't mind, but can we drive to the lodge? And he said, no, at this point you have to walk up to the lodge. And Kathy and I looked at each other, and I really left it up to Kathy. I thought, I can do it. If she can do it. And she said, I don't think we can do this.
My knee was hurting so bad at that point. And by the way, 2 or 3 days later, my knee stopped hurting, and it has not bothered me one time since. And so now I kind of hate it.
Well, the window is a great trail, but it is straight down and straight up. Just remember that. So I remember the next morning we got up, and before we... when we were planning this trip, I was all about, I'm going to do this hike, and I'm going to do that hike, and we'll do the window hike, and then the next day, maybe I'll do that 8-mile rim hike. Well, needless to say, I was no longer ready for the rim hike, and we decided to go for the scenic drive.
Yes.
And we took a beautiful scenic drive through Big Bend Park, and we saw the Santa Elena Canyon and the Rio Grande River. We looked over to Mexico. Both of us are bird watchers. We saw a beautiful raven, and we were feeling really good. And
that was the Ross Maxwell Drive.
Yes, and so now we come driving out of the park, and I guess what it was about 30 or 50 miles to the cabin from the park exit?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
The distances there are so immense. Yeah. And there's no buses or anything. You're going to have a car.
So, I'm driving along, and that hot temperature light comes on again. Oh my God. And we pull off the side of the road. So
a white pickup truck pulled over and these two Amazonian women climb out. And Deidre, that's Deidre and Nina. On the back of the window of the truck, they have a Greg Abbott sticker. And Mary cries out, "We're saved!"
And what had happened was, when the fan belt blew, the radiator hose came off, and a piece of the T-junction from the radiator came off. And so I needed to fill up the radiator again, but I needed to actually pull in the radiator hose closer, so I needed pliers. And you can imagine, these women had pliers with them. So they brought over their pliers. I reattached the radiator hose. It was a little closer. And we put in some more fluid because Brad Pitt had given us some extra fluid to carry with us. Yeah. And I said, "Well, you know, I think we might be okay now." And Deirdre said, "We'll follow you to make sure you're okay." So we head out, and
we go a little ways, and the hot light comes on again, so we stop. And then Deidre and Nina say, "Okay, we're going to go on." What was the name of the place that they went to?
Jackass Flats.
Jackass Flats. I knew it was something about a donkey. Okay, so they go on, and we're waiting there.
They say, "We're going to go up to Jackass Flats, and we're going to find out who to call for you." And but we broke down right in this driveway.
Yeah.
And you remember a gentleman came up behind us, mm-hmm. and he came out and said, "Can I help?" And I started to tell him, "Well, there's someone who's driven ahead to Jackass Flats who's going to call for help for us." And in the meantime, a truck is trying to come out of that property, but we have it blocked.
Right, yeah. So I see this big truck coming down the driveway that we're blocking, and I was ready to apologize and explain that we're going to get out of their way as soon as we can, and can you possibly go around or else help us push the car out of the way so you can get around. But they stopped, and this father and son mechanics, Sean and Colton, maybe what was his stepson's name?
Something like that.
Something, Colton. Get out, and they're the mechanics who own the garage that's at the other end of the driveway.
And they're the people that Jackass Flats called to come save us.
To come save us, yeah.
And we broke down right in their driveway. Yeah. We didn't break up, guys.
And Paul, the guy who had stopped to see if we needed help, said, "You don't need me. You've got the best mechanic around right here."
Yeah.
So he drove off. And now Deidre and Nina have come back to check on us, right? They had gone up ahead to Jackass Flats because they wanted to get some cold drinks.
And
they come back and they have their cold drinks and they're just checking on us and making sure we're okay. And they said they had called Sean, or they had had somebody call Sean to tell him to go look for us. And
Sean was on his way to find us, and we were
right there in his driveway. Did he have to tow the car, or it had cooled off enough?
No, I think it cooled off. We waited and cooled off, and he said, "Okay, you can just drive it up slowly up into my garage area,
100 yards or something." And so we drive up there, and you couldn't see the shop from the highway. But it was a big, rusting, metallic building that was surrounded by decaying cars, trucks, farm equipment, and other detritus. There was an RV that in a covered portion of the shop. And around back was a collection of antique furnishings and architectural pieces like a clawfoot bathtub, an ancient dentist chair, interesting old gates, a pinch chute for goats. So Sean had bought the place with all these objects included. He ran a thriving car and truck repair business, and he planned to build a home nearby. His wife would include some of the things in the shop's yard, so none of it was for sale, sadly.
I kind of wanted that dentist chair.
Yeah, the dentist chair was
pretty
interesting.
I'm not sure why, but...
Yeah, I don't know what you would have done with it, but... So we looked around. The shop is on 10 acres of cactus, rocks, and sticker bushes, and it's surrounded by hundreds of acres of the same. And we saw birds, we saw...
Oh, we went off bird watching while he worked on the car.
Yeah.
And he got it running again.
Yeah.
He filled it up with fluid, and he said, I think there might be something wrong with your head gasket, but it's not registering a leak, so I think you're okay. And we were supposed to drive up
to Fort Davis
to go to a star party that night.
Right.
So we were a little delayed, but we were hopeful we'd get to the star party.
Yeah.
We took off.
But it looked, by the time we got on the road, it was like 6 o'clock, and there was no way to make the 80 miles in time for the star party. Rats. So we just went on to Fort Davis and checked into our hotel, La Limpia.
It was a lovely hotel with this lovely 1920s architecture, mm-hmm. and a place where when we came in about 8:30, mm-hmm. There was just a note on the desk saying, clerk has gone to bed, but here's your keys. Help yourself. Go ahead. We'll see you tomorrow. And so I ran into the back and said, how late do places close for eating? And they said,
an hour ago.
Yeah. And I said, well, where is a good place to eat? They said, well, you can try across the street at the Harvard Inn. Apparently, Harvard had a contingency down near Fort Davis to use the observatory or to use the area for astronomy. And so they said, you can go across the street to the Harvard Hotel, and then there's also another Mexican food place up the road. So I go across the street. The Harvard Hotel is not open that night for food. The cafe next door says they just closed, but they said, you can go up the street to a Mexican restaurant. So we drive up there. Of course, it was about to close in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So,
but we made it.
We made it. And I have to say, you know, be prepared for restaurants closing at 8 p.m. in that part of the country. But we made it. We had a delicious meal.
Yeah. La Cueva de León.
Bring your own wine. La Cueva de León. Yeah.
She says no alcohol, but no problem. You can bring in your own. So we brought in, we had some in the car. Remember all that stuff that we had packed?
Right.
Thank goodness you didn't unload that at the cabin.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
So we had the wine in the car, and the waitress brought us a couple of those bumpy red plastic iced tea glasses that you find in every greasy spoon.
That's what we drank our wine
in. So we pour up, and she brought us plates of delicious food. I mean, I could have eaten a flip-flop at that point if it had hot sauce on it.
Oh, I think I had green enchiladas that were delicious.
Mm-hmm. So back at La Limpia, and I couldn't sleep that night. I'd been offered a job that I didn't really want, but I thought I needed. So I got up early. I found coffee. I started filling out a form. And Mary got up, and we looked for breakfast. No luck, but lunch was going to start pretty soon at the drugstore right across the street from our hotel. So we shopped for some handmade goods at some of the shops that are on the drag there, which is like one block long. So then the drugstore opened, so we went in there and we had burgers, fried green tomatoes, onion rings, and ice cream.
Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, we could hear our arteries snapping shut.
And even though we had missed the star party, I think we were feeling pretty good. Car was running.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to take a nice, long, scenic route back to our cabin. To our listeners, momentarily, we are safe and with a working car. More to come. But now, let's pause for station identification.
We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio, also broadcast at 91.9 in Huntsville, 89.5 in Galveston, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org. Our show, So What's Your Story, is broadcast every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Time. But, as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. Yes, just visit our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at houstonstorytellers.org, where you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap, which will be June 28th with the theme of Dads. And find other storytelling events on the calendar, such as the next meeting of the San Antonio Storyteller Association. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. You can find them at TejasStorytelling.com, and that's TejasStorytelling. Our friends at the Moth are back at Warehouse Live in person and back on schedule for the second Tuesday of the month. The next show is July 12th with the theme Nature. Check out their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on their next storytelling slam. Speaking of Facebook, you can find us at So What's Your Story on Facebook. Please visit us. Oh, yes, and please like us. You can suggest storytellers or themes on Facebook or by emailing us at swys@kpft.org. And now, let's curl up, get comfortable, and travel back to West Texas. Kathy, continue, please.
We went through Marfa, through this, it's like a lunar landscape out there.
You know, I will tell you, you can cross the street with your eyes closed in any one of those towns and nothing will happen to you.
So we hadn't researched Marfa very much, so we weren't sure where to go. So we just drove around. We stopped at the visitor center and a couple of shops. We moved past the concrete drainage pipe art piece that looks to me like an abandoned construction project. I can't pretend to understand art. So we go on to Presidio and the storied River Road, which follows the Rio Grande through Big Bend Ranch State Park and ends in Lajitas. There's stunning views of the cliffs, the river, forest, rocks, desert, all kinds of stuff. But before we can get to Lajitas, what happens?
That hot light goes on again.
Yes, that.
And I pull off the side of the road. And, you know, I had brought this satellite phone with me. And I tried to get it working. And I hate to admit it, but I think I forgot to turn it on. So I couldn't get it working. I knew we had passed a house maybe 100 feet or 200 feet back. So I walk back to that house, and I walk into their yard, and I walk into their back deck, and nobody's there. And I try the satellite phone again. It just turned off, I hate to say. And stand there a few minutes looking at the river and saying, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay, even though there's not very much traffic.
No, we'd seen maybe 5 cars in the 30 miles that we had driven.
But we'll be okay. If we need to, I think maybe a mile or two back was a construction site, a road construction site. And I had seen some buses go by with canoes, and I thought, you know, we'll go back to the car, and I can always tell Kathy, okay, the next time one of those vans comes by with the canoes for rafting on the river, put your thumb out. You hike to the next spot. I'll stay here with the car. We can do this. We can do this. It'll be okay.
So we waited, and we thought maybe the engine will cool down enough to let us limp along. And after 30 minutes or so, I guess, I don't know, the time means nothing.
Time means nothing when you're in a dead car in West Texas and it's hot.
Right. So a truck stop, and Jose Vargas gets out, bless him. And he takes a look under the hood, and I don't, what did he do there?
You know, I think he told us, yeah, you have a radiator problem, and maybe you've put too much water into it, and the water's boiling off because of the heat, and you just need to change out the radiator fluid. And so that's when he said he was there with his family.
Yeah.
And so they said, so we put more water in, and then the car was drivable, and he said, we'll follow you to
Lajitas,
and we'll pull over there. And he says, and then I'll change the radiator fluid for you there.
Yeah.
And indeed.
Another incredible kindness.
Yeah. Yes.
So, he said, Lajitas is only about 3 miles away, and the engine's cooled down, so we drove along, followed him, and he's with his partner, Lisa Estrada, and their two boys. And they were on their, they had other plans for that
evening.
What were they going to do? Do you remember? Were they going to go skating or swimming or something with the boys?
They were doing something in the area with the boys, but he stopped and he changed the radiator fluid. And I remember we said, can we buy you guys a bottle of wine or something? He said, no. And we kept asking him, and he said, well, my wife might want something. And so we immediately went and found her and said, we need to buy you a gift. You need to come inside and tell us what you want.
Yeah.
And then there was also the gentleman from Plunk.
Yeah. But back up just a sec. We were, that store that we stopped in has everything from auto parts to beer to food to I don't know what else they have.
I bought two different sizes of screwdrivers in there to get him the parts, that the screwdriver that he needed to open up the radiator. You know, I bought one, it didn't work. I went back and bought another to open up the radiator to change the fluid. And they had radiator fluid. Yeah. And they had beer and wine and food.
That's right. And we tried to get, ask Jose what he wanted, if he wanted. No, I don't want anything. So you said, okay, we're going to ask your wife. And we went and asked her, and she jumps out of the car, and she says, hell yes, if alcohol's involved, I'm in. So we go into the store, and we buy her some stuff, and we find out that she's a nurse. They live in El Paso, and she's a nurse, and she works at the Army.
The fort there.
Yeah, at the Army hospital.
Yeah.
And she's the COVID coordinator there. So we buy her some beer, and we buy ourselves some hard cider. And I asked the boys if they wanted anything, but they were too shy. And they said they didn't want anything. And I just wish now that I had asked their mom, what do they like, and just bought it for them. But I didn't. So sorry, boys. I'll pay it forward.
Right.
Yeah. So by now the car's okay, and we say goodbye to them. But before we leave Lajitas, we go over and say hello to the mayor of Lajitas.
And that's where, is his name Scott?
Oh, that's right. We met Scott
noticed,
there. Yeah.
He had noticed that our car, that we had pulled over. I can't remember if he pulled over behind us. And we said, oh, we're okay now. We're going to go ahead with Jose. And but he pulled into the same gas station and said, just want to make sure everything's okay. And did you know that the mayor of Lajitas is right over here?
Uh-huh.
And so we go and meet the mayor, who is
a goat.
Yeah.
Really, not greatest of all time, but actually a
kind of goat. Right. Yeah, you can't use the word goat anymore.
Right.
And yeah. Then he tells us, I live in Houston. And we said, oh, we live in Houston. I live in the Heights. He says, oh, yeah, I have a restaurant there. So he has Plonk, which we've been to. We met his brother.
Yes.
We haven't seen him yet, just to say thank you.
Well, it looks like we had wheels again, and we were about to begin our journey back home.
But I think we decided that before we left town, we should check with Sean again, considering that... We'd had this radiator problem.
Yeah.
So what night is this? Is this Wednesday?
So now we're up to Thursday morning when the dawn was cool, clear, and calm, but it was warm in the sun. And you made a nice breakfast of eggs and rice and that seaweed stuff and sauce. It was really good. And then we go over to the shop. Sean's place is called just The Shop. So he said, okay, you need some car parts, and he called ahead to the place in Alpine, and the car was running well enough that we thought we could make it there. And we actually did. So we drove to Alpine and to pick up those parts. We got the parts, and then we stopped for coffee. We wandered around trying to find a coffee place, and we found this shop. This looks like it'll work. We're called Riata, which is just a gem of a restaurant in downtown Alpine. So we had coffee and...
We had molten lava cakes
and
or something.
We had molten lava chocolate cake with drunken berries.
Yes.
It was just perfection. And the waitress, Kirsten, gave excellent service. And so we decided that we would come back the next day, Friday, because that was the day that, I'll get to that in a minute. So we were going to go have lunch there the next day. So we head back to the shop. And Sean allowed us now it's nearly quitting time, so he's going to start on the car in the morning. So he gave us a ride back to our cabin, which was only 3 miles away. And no, we didn't feel like hiking those 3 miles.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know, but it just didn't seem like a great idea. So Friday morning, we just hung around the cabin. It was going to be our last day there. So we just enjoyed the peace and quiet and the solitude there. And by about noon, I guess, the car was ready to go. And you he came and got you, right?
Right, and he actually test drove it for about 30 miles, he told me.
Mm-hmm.
Down to the entrance to Big Bend and back up to where his shop was. He said, it's working.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I was worried about that master...
Head gasket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the head gasket. But he said, working fine. You may need to put some more, fluid in it along the way, but I think you're okay. So we pack up. We head into Alpine, and we have a delicious lunch.
Yes.
And then we get in the car to go up, really to hit I-10 at Fort Stockton,
mm-hmm.
and then go east to Kerrville. And
everything was going to be wonderful.
Absolutely.
So about 30 miles outside of Alpine, the car
overheats again. This time Kathy is driving, and she's like, Mary! I'm like... Pull over.
So we pull over, stop again, and we're on the most desolate stretch of highway that you can possibly imagine. And experience told us that now we would need to call a tow truck. So Mary calls AAA, and after a ridiculous amount of time on hold, Agent Michael comes on the line. He's based in L.A., and he has no concept of the place that we're in, which is about halfway between Alpine and Fort Stockton, 30 miles in each direction, with nothing but rocks, cactus, barbed wire, and sticker bushes as far as the horizon. So he asked us,
what's your closest cross street? I said, well, about 30 miles ago, we left Highway 90, and about 30 miles ahead is I-10. Uh-huh. And he said, closest cross street? I said, that's it. And he said, is there a point of interest nearby? And as Kathy says later, oh, yeah, there was a windmill. We could have told him there was a windmill about 15 miles away. I said, no, no, there isn't. And he's going on about, well, how is the driver going to be able to find you? And I said, we're the only car on the side of the road of a two-lane highway with no cars on it between Highway 90 and I-10.
You know? He couldn't miss us if he tried.
Yeah. And then the coup de grace comes when he finally accepts, okay, I'm just going to say you're somewhere there. You know, he asked for a mile marker. I said, I don't know what mile marker we passed.
There are no mile markers on that road.
He said, just want you to know, because of COVID precautions, we will only allow one rider in the tow truck. And so only one of you can ride in the tow truck with the car. And I said, we're two old ladies out here in West Texas, you know, on the side of the road. You're going to make us, one of us, stay here? And he just repeats to me the policy, and Kathy says, shh, you know, in the background, just go with it, just go with it. So I said, okay, fine. And so we sit there, we wait for our tow truck driver.
Yeah, I said, we'll just negotiate with the tow truck driver when he gets here. And, I don't know, what was an hour or two later?
It was a while.
Like I said, the time just warps out there.
Oh, and Kathy, being wonderful Kathy, as we're sitting there and I'm like getting all fidgety, she says, don't you have a book? And I had this wonderful book that I hadn't really started yet called The Genius of Birds. So she pulls out the book and it's like chapter one. I don't know if you've ever seen Gone with the Wind, but if you remember, there's that night when they're waiting for the men to come home from some event and they're reading from some classic book. And so Kathy just pulls out the book and begins to read, and everything calms down. The world just goes to a sense of karma neutral.
Okay. So we're waiting for a couple of hours, and finally the tow truck gets there, and then the driver steps out, and I take one look at him, and I say, I don't think this guy's going to be a stickler for the rules. So it's Brian, and he's in his 30s. He's tall and muscular, and he's wearing these space-age mirror sunglasses. He has a blonde Fu Manchu nipple-length beard and a mohawk with the tips bleached white. So he didn't blink when the two of us climbed into his truck, but just to be safe, I didn't mention the one rider rule for a while. And then he laughed and said, nah, I'm not much for rules. So we dropped the car off at a shop on the outskirts of Fort Stockton, and Brian helped us unload our 50 bags, boxes, and other junk, and drove us to a hotel. What was it called? It was a La Quinta.
I think so.
La Quinta. We were both trying to figure out how to get us and our stuff all back to Houston. Rent a car, fly, abandon the Subaru, come back for it.
So I went on to Google and I literally typed, how do you tow a dead car from Fort Stockton 500 miles to Houston? And it turns out that there are these brokers who work with long-haul car haulers. Mm-hmm. So these car haulers are dropping off cars at various dealers, and after they drop off a few, they have a space. And they're happy to pick up another vehicle that needs a haul. And so I happened to get a hold of one of these brokers and told him what I needed, and he called me back, and he said, yeah, I got a deal for you. I got a truck that can pick this up tomorrow, you know, in the afternoon. If the car's drivable, it can drive up onto the ramp and be loaded. And I gave him the number of my mechanic. I have to say that while initially I thought that the romance was completely over, I had texted some members of my family to let them know that me and the car were getting a divorce. And my sister texted back and said, you know, car parts are expensive, cars are expensive, and if you're going to leave the car, you should actually negotiate a good price for it. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, maybe it's a good idea to take this car back and work on it, which is what I did through this car broker who arranged this tow that took it to my mechanic. Mm-hmm. So, but now was how for me and Kathy to get back to Houston. Car was taken care of now.
Yes. So we're thinking, okay, we could fly, but that entails a, where are we going to have to go?
We're
going to
fly from Midland, yeah, which is about 45 minutes away. And there's kind of spotty Uber service in the area.
And plus so, we have all this crap. How are you going to put all the crap?
I mean, we had a lot of leftover food.
We had a lot of food. I think we still had wine. Yeah. We had wood.
We had a lot of wood. We had double whatever you needed for a week to camp out in West Texas.
Right, yeah. So I called my brother, who is now nominated for sainthood.
He is.
And I said, will you come get us? And he says, sure, I'll drive 7 hours each way to rescue you. So now you're probably thinking, listener, that I'm going to say not right now. But no, he actually said, okay. And he actually did come and get us next day and was incredibly gracious about it.
Sainthood.
Yes, and so that brings us to the next day, the next part of our adventure.
The next part of our adventure.
Saturday in Port Stockton.
So we spend the night, we get up, we know that John is coming and he's going to spend the night with us and take us, and we've managed to arrange for the car to be taken care of. So now we're just stuck at this hotel on the edge of Port Stockton, not really within walkable distance of anything. But I'll tell you, Kathy's a great person to travel with. We go down for the free breakfast, and Kathy goes up to the hotel receptionist and explains our story and asks us if there's anything we can do. And by the time I finished my breakfast, Kathy has arranged for the receptionist to drive us down to the Fort Stockton historical area so we can tour the old fort and some museums. And she says, oh, you know, there's somebody here in the kitchen, and I'll just ask them to run the front desk while I'm gone, and I'll take you down there. And I get off at 3, so here's my number. Just call me, and I'll come back and pick you up. I mean, these people are amazing.
Another incredible act of kindness.
So yeah. She takes us down to the fort, and we walk around the fort, and we get to the new museum in the fort, and they say, oh, there's an event going on at another little museum in the town.
The Annie Riggs Museum.
And you should go up there to the event. So we head up there.
Mm-hmm. So the Annie Riggs Museum was formerly a boarding house that was run by Miss Riggs. And she was a driving force in the town over 100 years ago. So they were having an event there that had something to do with the local springs. And so we had nothing better to do, so we wandered that way, thinking, well, maybe we'll go, maybe we won't. No. Sort of indifferent about the whole occasion. And we found a coffee shop, and we went in there, and we had some coffee, and chatted with those sweet people in there. But this museum is only, like, I don't know, 20 steps from where we had coffee, half a block away, maybe. And so we go down there.
And may I mention, Fort Stockton is another place where you can cross the street with your eyes closed.
Oh, blindfolded, on your belly.
Yeah.
So the museum, it's a rambling one-story house with wide porches all around, and it houses frontier artifacts and exhibits from the 19th and early 20th century. So there's a small crowd milling about, and this tall old man announced that the tour of the springs was about to start.
Well, and we had been told it was going to be a walking tour, which we said that this is great because we had no vehicle. And he announces, It's not going to be a walking tour. I'll drive down there. Just follow me. And so I go up to him and I say, you know, my friend and I are here from Houston. Our car broke down. And we just came for the events, the celebrations. And we don't have a car. How do we get to this tour? And he says, oh, no problem. Just ride with me. So I said, okay. So not that I would ever tell my kids to ever get in a car with a stranger, but we get in the car with him and ride down to the Comanche Springs. And he gives us a tour.
Yeah. On the way there, he, which was like half a mile away, and a lot of people did walk, as it turned out. So he told us all about his life as a third-generation rancher in the area, and he was now retired and the head of the Historical Society. Comanche Springs is running again after being dry for years, now due to voluntary conservation efforts. The springs feed a large pool, which has been a community gathering place probably for centuries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The pool is now enclosed with concrete, and it's surround and it has some bleachers around it, and it's still quite a center of community activity. Our guide talked about how the springs ran dry, mostly due to poor water management practices. And now better practices and incentives have started to reverse that trend. He talked about tourism and how people from as far away as Houston would come visit, and he pointed Mary and me out to the crowd. So back at the museum, a band was setting up on a stage outdoors. It was a beautiful, clear day, cool in the shade. Wine, beer, sodas, and snacks were offered. And
Snacks, Kathy? They were Cheez-Its.
Okay, Cheez-Its. Well, you know, it wasn't much, but it was nothing.
It was
not,
but it was wine, and like, wine and Cheez-Its. It was
algo nice. Es algo, right?
Sí, algo es algo.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so this spokeswoman from this NGO, she gave a speech about the springs and water conservation, but first she was introduced by the guide, who again pointed out the two ladies from Houston whose car broke down, calling us special guests. So that was our moment in the Fort Stockton spotlight.
Oh, I thought we should have set up a booth and given autographs. We're like, we even have two women from, you know, we have a great crowd here. We even have two women from Houston whose car broke down.
We got a nice round of applause
yes,
from us.
Yes.
So about this time, my brother John called to say that he was in town, and so I told him how to get where we were, and he pulled up and parked and came in to see the museum and to bask in our reflected glory.
We were famous for a short period of time.
So back at the hotel, we had noticed a taqueria a few hundred yards away, and we decided to walk over there and have dinner. We get there, we start to order, and John only wants a little bit because he tells the waitress, she says, is that all you want? He says, yeah, I just had a gastric sleeve a couple of weeks ago. She says, oh, I had one back in December. I feel great. I've lost 80 pounds. It's wonderful. And so then we say, okay, we want some chips and some dips, and do you have beer? Oh, sorry, we don't have our liquor license yet. But you can bring in your own. Okay, well, where can we get some? Where can we get some beer? Is there a store nearby? Is it walking distance? She said, well, it's not really walking distance, but I'll go get it for you.
Yeah, we told her that we had walked over. We didn't have our car with us.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I'll go get it for you.
I'll go get it for you. Yeah, incredible, right?
I know. Here we are sitting at this restaurant. And when we finished eating, she said, oh, I forgot what I did with the receipt. Don't worry about the beer. And we're like, no. Oh, yeah. I mean, the kindness never stopped flowing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just blown away by that. But we did pay her.
We
did give her some money.
Absolutely.
How much do you think it was? I don't know, $11. Does that sound right?
Hey.
Fine. I would have given her 50, I think.
Yeah.
So back at the hotel, we conked out that night. And then Sunday's drive back to Houston was mercifully uneventful. And John, my brother, a skillful driver, drove the entire way.
A skillful driver with a car that kept on driving.
Yes, with a reliable car.
What were your feelings at the end of this trip?
Well, I felt like we didn't really have the trip that we had planned on having, but we got a really good adventure that's worth remembering and a story that was worth telling. And we saw some awesome sights. We ate great food. We drank lots of good wine. And we met many wonderful, kind, sweet people. I can't say enough about how wonderful everybody was that we ran into. So we got home refreshed and with our faith in humanity restored.
Absolutely. That was the most important part of the trip. All these hikes and views I thought we were going to see were replaced by all these wonderful interactions with people.
Yeah.
And they were all wonderful. And they just came from different walks of life and different places, but they were all willing to help the next person, to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And
we got a lot of paying it forward to do, Mary.
We do. We owe.
Yes, that's right. Karma is waiting for us.
But we will.
We will, yes.
That's what it's all about. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kirkland, for sharing a well-told, wonderful tale of our adventure and bringing us back safely to Houston.
This is Arnie Arneson, host of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. So who is this Arnie person? Well, I delivered my first baby without the benefit of health insurance. As a young state rep, I breastfed my second kid on the floor of the legislature. I gained a reputation for talking truth to power, and in 92 became the first female nominee for governor, beating my party chairman and our five-term congressman. Today, I describe myself as a politician in recovery, but the constant in my life, my love affair with political talk. Tune into The Attitude with Arnie Arneson Monday mornings at 5 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. and settle in for an edgy, eclectic hour of people, policy, and politics. The Attitude provides the facts and stories that define our lives.
Hi, this is Steve Gallington of the People's News here on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. But what is the People's News? Just as KPFT is commercial-free, people-powered radio, the People's News is people-powered news. We are not owned by corporations nor dependent on business for funding. We are free to report the unvarnished and unspun truth. The People's News can be heard every Friday from 8 till 9 p.m. right here on KPFT 90.1 FM.
Ken and MJ's Flower Power Hour.
Oh, wow.
Warning, prolonged listening may lead to enlightenment. Proceed at your own risk.
Yeah, man.
Saturday
night. You're listening to